Looking to buy a ring for your wrestling, boxing, or MMA promotion?
Unleash a monster.
Are you looking for a cage, steel security rails, vinyl canvas and mat covers, a ring bell, or a ring trailer?
Unleash a monster.
Are you looking for a 6- or 8-sided ring? Do you want your own custom design?
Unleash a monster.
Monster Wrestling and Boxing Rings is your complete source for all kinds of rings and accessories. If your business is wrestling, boxing, or MMA, if you need a complete ring, a custom design, or even a do-it-yourself kit, then...
Unleash a monster.
Monster rings are used by large promotions, independent promotions, training centers, movie studios, television companies, video game companies, churches, government agencies, nightclubs, bars, youth leagues, martial arts studios, and individuals around the world. Monster Rings sells more rings than all their competitors combined. So,
unleash a monster.
Head to MonsterWrestlingRings.com and explore all the options. Forget the rest. Buy from the best. MonsterWrestlingRings.com.
Unleash a monster.
Today.
Welcome to Fight Opinion Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Thaler, along with the Fight Opinion crew. As always, the man behind Fight Opinion, worldwide, world-famous MMA and pro wrestling author, Zach Arnold. Hello, Zach.
I am doing very well, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. You know, you're a man who's getting, not only are you writing articles on your own site, Fight Opinion, and ProWrestlePower.com?
Good try.
Yeah, it's close.
You're never, ever going to be able to pronounce that. Just stop trying.
Hey, Aaron, theoretically, you're not even here yet because we didn't introduce you.
Oh,
Aaron,
sorry. Of course.
Aaron Bucknell from MMA California.
Yes, that's it.
Hello.
She screwed up the whole intro.
It's okay. MMA California and also Fight Opinion, the snarkiest writer in all of mixed martial arts, although I think Fight Linker is
But I know. I was just about to say, I think Fight Linker might have me up on that one. I've been getting my snark on over on his site lately.
Yeah, he's been kicking some major ass in snarkiness. But anyways, Aaron, Zach, I was just trying to say, you know, you've been getting published in mainstream media now. You're breaking out of just this whole Fight Opinion thing. Are you about to take off and leave us Fight Opinion folks in the dust, or are you going to stick around a while?
Me?
Yeah.
I would never forget my roots.
You won't forget the little people here at Fight Opinion.
That's right.
Ah, that feels so good to hear that. How do you feel? All right, Aaron. No comment?
Wow. I'm sorry. I didn't even hear it.
All right. Well, listen, guys, this week, you know, we've had, I guess, like a kind of a slow couple weeks in terms of fights. There haven't been a lot of shows. I guess there was the Showtime had a show this weekend, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But this has really kind of been a build-up in MMA. Really, it's more like we're in a holding pattern waiting for what's going to come next. Zach?
It does kind of seem like it.
Well, that's because Dana White was on vacation in Tahiti during the 2 weeks. But now he's back, and we have lots of material.
Well, we have lots of material on Dana for a change. But you know what? Before we get into any of that, guys, I sat down and like kind of took a look at what we got coming up in, let's say, the next month or 2 months. And this is going to be one of those UFC dominated couple months. I mean, we have got a ton of shows and a ton of fights coming up.
It really looks crazy in terms of scheduling. I look at this and there's, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 5 shows that I see of note. And then there's always Heroes in September with the return of Yoshihiro Akiyama. It's going to be lots of activity.
Right. Well, let's run down what we got coming up just here in the States in the near future, because we're going to start, guys. You can't forget, on the 5th of August, as we're taping this, it's a couple days before, the 5th of August, the WEC is going to have a championship fight live on Versus TV. And, Zach, that's Carlos Condit and Brock Larson.
I'm looking forward to this fight. Brock Larson, if you remember him in his first WC fight on versus TV, he destroyed his opponent in 26 seconds. That was quite the beating. And the irony, of course, is Brock Larson is also from Minnesota, just like Brock Lesnar. Nonetheless, Carlos Condit is someone who John Alessio had on his radar when we interviewed John earlier on in the year on the show. And Brock Larson has a really good shot here of winning, although I think Carlos Condit is so well-rounded that he probably should win.
And retain the title.
Yes.
All righty. And you know what, though? But that is probably the biggest fight on the card in terms of WEC-dom. But in terms of what I'm interested in, it's the next fight. I think that would be easily the most interesting for me. And that's Paulo Filho making his U.S. debut against Joe Dorkson. We've talked about Paulo numerous times here on the show, and we've mentioned it. The guy was a world junior champion in judo. He is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He's an Abu Dhabi champion. He's an undefeated fighter. He was actually the favorite to win the Pride lightweight tournament until he injured himself. And with the dissolution of Pride, he is now showing up in the WEC at 185 pounds to take on veteran Joe Dorkson. And guys, I think this is going to be, it's a good, fair test of him, but I think he's going to walk through Dorkson. He fights kind of like a smaller and perhaps even more talented version of Ricardo Arona. We should tell you that, it's not, some people think he can be slow on the ground. I've seen him have, do great job passing the guard and mounting and trying to finish, but definitely a fighter to watch out for. And it's almost a shame he's in the WEC, but there's another fighter, Aaron, who is in the WEC because he hasn't quite had too much luck in the UFC. It's the comeback of Tiki Gosin.
Oh, yay. I mean, really, all that I know about the guy is that he's one of Tito's boys and he has really funny facial hair.
And that's enough to get you in a UFC-related show. Or it used to be, but now it's active. Tito's on the outs. How do you think Tiki got in?
Yeah, Tiki got in, but Takanori did not.
There's a bigger show coming up after that, if you can believe it. Just 20 days later, just 3 weeks later, essentially, we're going to have UFC 70, what is it, Zach?
UFC 74 in Las Vegas.
UFC 74, and Aaron, this is a big headline fight. This is, in terms of significance, almost as big as they come. Randy Couture and Gabriel Gonzaga.
Oh, yes. I know that the last pay-per-view here in Sacramento was called Stacked, but had this show been at the Arco Arena, I would have been throwing down big bucks to have seen that one live. I would love to see this match. 6 months ago, a year ago, no one would have given Gonzaga a chance, but then no one gave him a chance against Mirko either. I'm really looking forward to see how this fight goes.
Zach, 6 months ago, nobody would have given Gonzaga a chance to win the championship, and Couture was retired.
Yes, Styles makes fights, though, and Gonzaga is such a bigger guy than Randy Couture, and he also is a very good guy on the ground, and he's improved stand-up, really gives Randy a lot of trouble here, although, if Randy can use the old Tim Sylvia strategy, which is put him down and just drag it out for five rounds, that's pretty much his one shot.
I mean, this is the exact prototype of the fighter at heavyweight who forced Randy Couture to move down to light heavyweight originally, because remember, first it was a man who will be featuring on our show in a little bit, Josh Barnett. By the way, everybody, coming up, big interview this week, Josh Barnett. Josh Barnett destroyed Randy Couture, basically too big, too strong, too good a grappler. Josh Barnett was stripped of the heavyweight title. And then Rico Rodriguez came in, and Rico Rodriguez, same thing, too big, too strong, too good a grappler, beat Randy Couture. This is almost like the blueprint for beating Randy, is to be someone like Gonzaga.
It is, and the question, of course, is Gonzaga, the big question for him anyways is his conditioning. Can he last five rounds? Because it's not a three-round fight, it's a five-round fight, and Randy's going to make him work. And we'll see how much he has in the gas tank.
And all us guys that are around Randy's age or a little bit younger, we got to root for the old guy, right, Zach?
Well, not my position. I'm not going to root for a guy because he's old.
Well, but he's
I'm not going to call Randy Couture old. Are you going to call him old?
Well, I think in terms of fighting years, yes.
Would you say that to his face?
Well, of course. How old is he, 43, 42? You can't tell me he's a young fighter. I mean, it's not an insult to say as a fighter he's an old fighter.
Call him old.
He's not washed up.
Why don't you get him a walker?
What?
Why don't you buy him a walker and a cane?
Why don't you buy him a walker and a cane? I didn't see anything of the sort.
How about you both do that, and I'll sit on the other side of the room and watch him kill you both at the same time.
He's too nice a guy to do that. He'd probably just walk away with disgust.
Well, I mean, he's not old. He's not like going to Burger King and getting a 10% discount on
no,
food.
I'm just talking about in terms of a lifespan of a world championship caliber.
You really got yourself in trouble here.
Great, guys. So. Now I just have an image of Randy walking into a Burger King with his walker and taking his teeth out to order a burger. That's fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Well, what about this? Roger Huerta, Alberto Crane. I think Alberto is not necessarily the top of the food chain, but he's undefeated. He has a couple good victories under his belt. Solid grappler. People think this is a cakewalk. I'm not so convinced, Zach.
Why are you not convinced it's a squash match?
Well, because I don't think necessarily Albert Crane is a person that can be easily squashed. If this, he could survive on the ground, and he's a dangerous fighter. He's a good grappler.
Jordan Breen would be screaming at you for saying this.
Why?
Because Alberto Crane to him is like a total jobber to him. Like Mr. Leg Locks, and that's it.
No, Zach. If this is MMA, not pro wrestling, they're referred to as cans here, not jobbers. Got to remember.
Well, okay, he's a ham and egger.
All right. I mean, he is 8-0. He did beat Javi Vasquez. He did really well in the Abu Dhabi qualifiers. I mean, this is not a guy that's just walking in off the street. What is it about him, Zach, that makes people think he's such an easy opponent?
It's because UFC has this habit of being very careful with picking guys for Roger Huerta. It's not so much on Crane as it is on UFC and their credibility in booking Roger in certain fights. The fact that he had trouble with Doug Evans in his last fight, it should be alarming.
Yeah, well, I think he might have trouble with Alberto Crane, so there you go.
If he has trouble with Alberto Crane, it's over for him.
Yes, well, that's a bad sign for him. But you know what? There's a huge, huge fight on this card as well, Zach, and that's Josh Koscheck and George St. Pierre.
Looking forward to this. World-class wrestler. We're not seeing many of those being pushed right now by UFC at the moment, but should be very interesting to see if St. Pierre's got his head back on straight and if he's injury free. Because I think, as long as his knee's doing well, he should easily be faster in the octagon than Koscheck. He should easily be faster on the ground.
Yeah, he is no joke. But I think I just think Koscheck's wrestling is going to be too strong for him. I think.
Koscheck is a great fighter. He's come a very long way since the Ultimate Fighter, but I gotta go with George. I think he's just a step above as a fighter, and he's still gonna be too pissed at himself for letting himself lose to Sarah that he's not gonna let it happen again this time.
Alright. Well, alright. So we say this card is stacked. Let me run down real quickly some of the other fights on this card to make us say it's stacked besides what we've already mentioned. We have Kurt Pellegrino versus Joe Stevenson. Very solid fight.
To me, is the fight that I'm paying most attention to.
Really?
I think the winner of that fight gets a shot at the title, the 155 title, which of course, we can segue that in a minute to some of the comments Dana White made about Sean Sherk in the ESPN interview. But, I think Pellegrino and Stevenson, whoever wins, probably faces either BJ Penn or Kenny Florian for the 155 belt.
So that is a significant fight. We have, Kendall Grove, who, if you guys watched his Raw Vegas TV interview where he explains that he had a gun pulled on him in Edmonton, Canada and survived, he's taking on Patrick Cote. Well, it was a very interesting story. You should look up that story on the internet.
Well, one thing that we should learn from that, Patrick Cote, Kendall Grove video is that, kids don't play with drugs.
There you go. Absolutely. We are not a pro-drug show. Right, Zach?
Absolutely not. That's why I guess the title stacked for UFC 73 was alluding to the fighters and drug tests.
Ouch.
Yeah, that looking back, that may not have been the best title for a fight show ever.
Okay, now check this out, too, guys. Let's look at the bottom of the card. This is the bottom of the UFC pay-per-view. These shows are not going to – these are fights not guaranteed to be on pay-per-view. We got Bob Lou coming back against David Heath. Bob Lou was on the precipice. I mean, he was considered a top five fighter coming off two hard losses, but still bottom of the card. Aaron?
I don't see it at all, but I'm a huge Bob Lou fangirl, and I think he just needs cookies and hugs. But,
he's a criminal.
He spit and threw money. How dare he? All right. So look, this is how strong a card is. Bob Lou, not on the broadcast. Clay Guida versus Marcus Aurelio. not on the broadcast. Zach, a lot of people know Clay Guida because he had an excellent, excellent fight where he lost that tough decision against Tyson Griffin. But Zach, a lot of people don't know Marcus Aurelio, but he's a really tough, solid fighter.
This is absurd that they're not putting this on the main card, because Clay Guida was the only guy who had an exciting fight at the Ireland show on Save That pay-per-view from being total disaster. This is a nice way for UFC to pay him back, bury him in a dark match, and then put him against a guy who beat Takanori Gomi, who has a good reputation in terms of being on the ground and getting guys caught in submissions. And this is just a bad, bad situation for Mr. Clay Guida.
Yeah, and that, I'd imagine that's the bottom of the card. And then, of course, we have the guy, Aaron, who's probably sunk the furthest in of any MMA fighter there is, as Frank Mir, and he's taken on Anthony Hardonk. Frank Mir was UFC champ, had suffered a terrible motorcycle accident, broke his leg, and Aaron, look where he is now.
You have to wonder if it's really the accident that has caused him to fall so far, or it's just the fact that that was the best the heavyweight division had at the time. I really don't know. If he pulls off a win, good for him. The way he's going, though, I'd be quite surprised.
If he can't beat a guy who's 5-3-0, he ain't getting back.
Yeah.
Well,
no.
Is it fair to ask why UFC keeps booking this guy?
Is this the last fight on his contract, maybe?
I don't know.
All right. Well, this would be an even stronger card, guys, because we got to keep moving. But Travis Luter, scheduled to be on the card, injured off the card. But still, top to bottom, an outstanding, really an outstanding card for UFC 74. All right, but then, guys, we're running out of time, but look, we got after that, on the 8th of September, we have UFC 75 on free TV, Quentin Jackson versus Dan Henderson, Matt Hemmel versus Mike Bisping, Krokop back against Che Congo, Houston Alexander against Alessio Sakara, Alexander coming off a knockout win against a guy who's going to fight for the UFC championship next. Another very solid, interesting card, and I bring that up because at UFC 76, Chuck Liddell is going to be fighting the man he beat, Keith Jardine, for the title, which is a little bit odd. But we also have Shogun Hua fighting Forrest Griffin, Thiago Tavares versus Tyson Griffin, John Fitch and Diego Sanchez. I mean, guys, and not only that, but there's a UFC Fight Night coming up. This is really, we're about to hit a stretch of some primetime fights.
I smell red meat fights coming up, Jeff.
Red meat fights coming up, but you know what else is coming up, Zach?
What else is coming up on the show, Jeff?
Well, as always, at the end, our last end of the show, we will have...
World Famous Grab Bag!
That's right, the World Famous Grab Bag. But really, the big news this week, we have an exclusive interview with former UFC heavyweight champion, former Pride major contender, and now MMA free agent, Josh Barnett. And we are going to have a lot to talk to Josh about. So you guys stay tuned, because when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit, Zach, about Dana White in a very controversial interview on ESPN, and then the big Josh Barnett interview. So stay tuned.
It's not easy being an MMA fan. Your annoying brother-in-law, who's been watching MMA since Ultimate Fighter Season 5, continues to claim that he knows more about fighting than you. I hate to tell you this, buddy, but I think Royce Gracie's gonna be the next champ. You know he's the best heavyweight ever. Well, we can't help that he married your sister, but we can make your brother-in-law shut his fat pie hole about how he knows MMA better than you. At MMAPredictions.com, you can track your predictions against that jerk over time and see graphs showing which of you really knows the sport. You can even create groups among your buddies to talk smack. Use it for the guys at the office, your gym, or your girlfriend's book club. Be careful, though. Woo! I won again! MMAPredictions.com. Pick, share, compare, win.
The International Fight League.
Fight! You gotta win. Your game is to compete. You're a competitor.
The world's number one mixed martial arts league concludes its 2007 world premiere season on September 20th at the Hard Rock Live at Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. In one epic team battle, which team will put the rings on their fingers as the 2007 world champions? Be a part of it all on Thursday, September 20th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hard Rock Live at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida. To purchase tickets, visit the box office, Ticketmaster.com, or IFL.TV.
Thank you.
Zach and Fight Opinion Radio. You got Jeff, Zach, and Aaron. And Zach, this is your red meat this week.
I am looking forward to having red meat. I've been on a vegetarian diet for the last couple of weeks without Dana White material, but we have it now.
Dana White?
Well, who doesn't always love ranting Dana White?
Dana White went on a long vacation with his family to Tahiti, but he came back and he made a few comments to ESPN, and now we got a little bit to talk about, huh, Zach?
Oh, anytime he opens his mouth, we have something to talk about.
Well, okay, so what did he talk about to ESPN? Of course, the big question's been, what's he going to do about drug testing and steroids in mixed martial arts in light of the just recent, I guess, deluge of positive test results, including Sean Sherk versus Hermes Franca in the championship fight, the last UFC, and Dana decided to go off, Zach.
He goes off in only the way he possibly can, basically defending himself against accusations from various internet writers that he has not done enough to help out the MMA drug culture situation and has not imposed enough sanctions internally to the fighters. And he defended himself and said some quite controversial answers, in my opinion.
He sure did. Now, one thing he said was he decided to go and attack another fighter again.
He not only attacked another fighter, he went off on a rant, on a tirade against rival promoters within the first few words of the interview.
I thought that was a little strange. So what happens here, folks, is the ESPN first question, our second question, what changes do you plan to make about drug testing? That's what they're referring to. Questions, what changes do you plan to make? And his answer is, moving forward, I'm going to put the bitch slap on guys who get caught using steroids from here on out. Fighters make a lot of money. And then all of a sudden, Zach, out of the blue, here it comes. I have all these nickel and dimers starting up leagues, and they don't steal fighters from me. There are a lot of morons out there throwing money around, and nobody's leaving me. Where did that come from?
I don't know where that came from. I think he's paranoid about Gary Shaw and what's happening there. By the way, Gary Shaw's event, Show XC, the debut of it, last Friday in Santa Ynez, California, 20 fighters were tested. All of them were clean. That was the first MMA show in California where everyone came clean.
Yay!
So Gary Shaw at least has a show where guys all came clean.
But the weird thing is just why go off on that tangent?
Suddenly bust out with, I have all this money and no one's taking my fighters? Is it kind of some weird form of UFC Tourette's where he just busts out with this stuff for no reason?
He is scared to death that a lot of the blame on this MMA drug culture is going to go on him. And he's immediately shifting the blame in his mind on the other promoters and saying essentially that everything he's doing is right, has controls, and they're doing all the testing. Yet he knows that the PR war is going to go against him.
Yeah, well, he made himself the face of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, he did.
He's going to have to pay the price now. And the other funny thing in that comment, the fighters make a lot of money. You know, maybe, maybe not. Depends on your perspective. Josh Barnett would say they make plenty. We'll ask him about that. Some of us might think they can make a little more.
You have guys working pay-per-views making $3,000 a year, a fight. Come on.
Well, yeah. I got to say that I have a little sympathy for that because, you know, you're worth what you are in the market. And a bottom-of-the-card fighter is probably not worth that much because he's not bringing much in, just similar to what Josh would tell you. But I don't think that the fighters are getting their fair share of the $300 million or $200 million in revenue, pay-per-view revenue, $100 million in TV contracts. That's
I don't want to hear him say that the fighters are paid well because not all of them are paid well. If all of them were paid well, many of them wouldn't have second jobs.
Yeah, or they'd have health insurance. All right, but moving on, he did decide to also rip into Hermes Franca, Zach.
He did. Hermes Franca, in his MMA Weekly statement when it was first announced he failed his drug test, said that he took steroids because he had an injury and needed to recover quicker. Dana White, of course, in his own way, in the ESPN interview, basically buried Hermes Franca, said that Hermes Franca only had an ankle twist and that the guy called to cancel and then called to fight back in a couple of days.
Yeah, his
quote
was...
So he basically threw Hermes Franca under the bus while basically kissing up to Sean Sherk.
Yeah,
I love that. He says that, you know, what Hermes is saying is the dumbest thing ever, but, you know, Sherk is totally innocent and, you know, he's my friend, and I believe what he says, but Hermes is a dork, and he's lying his butt off.
Well, the other funny thing about Sean, what he says, let's build on that. What he says, like exactly what you said, that Hermes' statement was the dumbest thing ever said. Meanwhile, he believes Sean Shirk is innocent until proven guilty because he's not a liar and he's not a cheater. But Zach, I mean, I think he's already been proven guilty. Now we're just on appeal.
That's right. And Dana White, you know, not once in the interview did he say he would strip the title from Sean Shirk. Not once did he roughly reprimand him like he did Hermes Franca or anyone else. And he seemingly did not want to accept any of the responsibility for these guys failing their tests. He basically put the onus on the athletic commissions like Gary Shaw has. And he was very, very defensive about what he was doing. He went only so far as to say that he would not pay fighters bonuses, but he would say that he would pay fighters what is in their contract still. So if you're a top fighter and in your contract it says you should get a pay-per-view, cut of the pay-per-view sales, you know, I guess he's not going to take that away.
Well, you know, that's because he's bound by his contracts. He's limited in that regard. The real thing he could do, there's a couple real things to do. One thing he could do is he's got these fighters under contract. He has a certain amount of time to, you know, that they're exclusive to him, whether they fight or not. He could just not book them.
Yeah, just don't have them fight for a whole year. Say, fine, you got suspended. You are not fighting for me for a whole year after your suspension's up or something like that.
Yeah, he could do that. Another thing, guys, this is a little thing that really caught my eye. They asked him about drug testing in states and countries where they don't have it, such as the UK, Ireland, and when he went to Texas. He claimed they had it everywhere but one show in the UK, but nobody ever bothered to ask him if there was a positive test in Ireland, or nobody bothered to ask him if there was a positive test in Texas. Zach, were we all just sleeping on the job? Nobody even bothered to contact him, or would he have answered if you had asked him 3 months ago if there was a positive test?
He was asked. That's all I can say. All I could possibly say is he and Mark Ratner were both asked. Mark Ratner was asked about this by CBS Sportsline when we were doing research for my two-part MMA drug culture interview series.
And he did not respond.
Mark Ratner said that there were four guys tested in the Ireland show and none of them failed, but he would not name who the four fighters were.
Not quite as open a policy as Dana would have you believe that. I didn't know any they were asked, but if you've asked or as part of your articles they asked, I guess we know firsthand they were asked.
I have the transcript of it, in fact.
And they were a little less than forthcoming, I see.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Then, guys, I think there's one other thing that was of note in here, which is he said, Zach, something that I think you would take umbrage with, which is that the UFC has the strictest drug testing policy in all of sports.
I had to laugh at that. He said that MMA and boxing have the strictest drug testing policy in sports, which just made me I couldn't stop laughing, because you look at many of the boxers who have failed their steroids test or whatnot. Many of the boxers who fight once a year. So if they get suspended, it doesn't mean a thing because they're just taking that off their normal year and they're just going to train in the gym. You look at MMA. Many of the tests that are used are basic standard tests, and Aaron alluded to this a couple of weeks ago on Fight Opinion Radio. These are the same tests that you and I would take if we were working for the state of California.
Yes, so, I was specifically told that they're the exact same test. We're tested by the government, acting like every single state uses the exact same testing when they don't.
No,
I know
government
California's pretty darn stringent about it, but I can't guarantee that, say, Oregon's going to be the same way.
No, government means federal legislation. They do not have federal legislation in for drug testing. They have state legislation, and that depends state by state. In California, you know, for whatever it is, the reason they're catching so many guys is because there's so many shows out here. Nonetheless, their test is a 6-to-1 TE ratio, which is pretty generous. That's, you know, that's saying, okay, you can have six times the level of testosterone in your body. Testosterone, by the way, the original base chemical for anabolic steroids. You can have six times the amount of testosterone in your body and still not fail the test. You look at other tests and other drug tests, it's 4-to-1, or in the Olympics, it's 2-to-1.
No,
a very generous basic test.
Zach. How could you even say that? It was laid out on the line by Dana White. He said in the article, quote, you and me probably have 6 nanograms of nandrolone in our system. He had 12. Other guys have been busted for the same story and had over 50 nanograms. So what the experts tell me, this is Dana speaking, there's no way he would have only 12 in his system. So obviously 12 is normal. Dana has told us 12 is really pretty normal for a guy.
So because some guys go completely overboard with it, someone who just uses it a little really couldn't be using it at all.
Or who stopped ahead of time. Yeah, or if he stopped ahead of time, it wouldn't count. So, Zach, I don't know where these Olympic people, whoever they are, think they know about drugs. Dana
well, finandrolone 6 means you're a genetic freak. 12 means you're double the genetic freak. 50 means you're just nuts.
You know what? I don't think that you have the right to question the, someone as successful as Dana White, so why don't you just quiet up now?
Hey, okay. I must say, though, unless they did some really good editing, it looks like Dana may have actually made it through the entire interview without saying fuck once.
Ooh,
no, wait. They edited it out several times.
Darn it. Yeah. I was hoping he might have managed to do it.
Well, here's he goes. He goes, if your life was over, every time you make a mistake, that's pretty fucking harsh. Sorry, Aaron.
Damn.
It was close, though. There's another one.
He's trying. He's trying.
When these guys have problems, I'm the first fucking guy they call and we get taken care of. So, no, there's a couple F-bombs in there. They're just polite enough to edit, put little dashes so that our eyes won't be offended.
Yes, of course.
I thought this was an embarrassing interview by Dana White in the media. This was a credibility killer.
It was. I think, you know what? I don't think anybody's going to care. But for those of us who follow it.
That's why he's lucky, because he's lucky that people aren't paying attention close to it. But, you know, the thing is, as we learned with Dana White, he reads what people write about him, and I'm sure he read what I wrote about him.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. And, you know, he's, you know, you say he's lucky that people aren't paying attention, because I don't think it's that big an issue in the public consciousness, because if it was, this interview wouldn't really satisfy people who are upset. But I don't really think the world's all that upset, which is awfully lucky for the UFC at this point. However, as we discussed last time, if it continues, it's a major problem. And whether he likes it or not, whether he is really responsible for the birth or the existence of the problem or not, he is going to have to do something to address it to preserve his credibility.
If he wants to see what's going to happen to his company if he doesn't get this fixed in the next year or two, he should go watch and see what's happening with WWE, congressional investigation, plus their ratings are tanking.
Yeah.
Well, although I'd argue that their ratings are tanking more because the product's really crappy right now, but
and a lot of their guys I'm are sure getting injured, and a lot of their guys are getting injuries that sometimes people who take supplements get
might possibly be getting. Yeah.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen here. It's you know, it's another remarkable Dana White interview, but we've gotten used to those. But something Fight Opinion fans ought to be getting used to is another big interview on our show, Zach. Because when we come back from this break, we have
Josh Barnett on, the former UFC heavyweight champion, former King of Pancras champion. He still may be the current King of Pancras champion. I don't know if he relinquished his belt, but nonetheless, we'll talk a lot about Carl Gotch, talk a lot about his death and catch wrestling and the role of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts, which I'm sure that the MMA purists are going to be thrilled with.
Oh, yeah. And all that, lots more when we come back right after this.
Looking to buy a ring for your wrestling, boxing, or MMA promotion?
Unleash a monster!
Are you looking for a cage, steel security rails, vinyl canvas and mat covers, a ring belt, or a ring trailer?
Unleash a monster!
Are you looking for a 6- or 8-sided ring? Do you want your own custom design?
Unleash a monster!
Monster Wrestling and Boxing Rings is your complete source for all kinds of rings and accessories. If your business is wrestling, boxing, or MMA, if you need a complete ring, a custom design, or even a do-it-yourself kit, then
unleash a monster.
Monster rings are used by large promotions, independent promotions, training centers, movie studios, television companies, video game companies, churches, government agencies, nightclubs, bars, youth leagues, martial arts studios, and individuals around the world. Monster Rings sells more rings than all their competitors combined. So,
unleash a monster.
Head to MonsterWrestlingRings.com and explore all the options. Forget the rest. Buy from the best. MonsterWrestlingRings.com.
Unleash a monster.
Today.
Okay, move the band here. Yeah, that's very nice. It's very nice. Okay, all right. Hurry up. Okay, put that over there. Oh, no. Oh, jeez. No, careful with that. All right, ready? Set that up. Action. What can you find at Cockatoo.com?
Fresh opinions.
Very informative segments.
Plus, tons of original content.
plus our store of Japanese fight goods and Kakuto Fan Radio. So check us out at www.kakuto.com.
You can be a hero for our troops currently deployed to active duty. The life of a deployed soldier is an important and vital job. It requires a lot of sacrifice while they're away from their families and loved ones for extended periods of time. This is your chance to contribute and lighten their day. Heroes for Heroes is a non-profit organization that collects all sorts of entertainment media and sends them to our troops overseas. Comic books, DVDs, CDs, games, and money for purchasing this media are all valid donations. Each one of these are vital to supporting the morale of all of our deployed military personnel and are collected by Heroes for Heroes for redistribution. Heroes for Heroes is a non-profit organization and their site is heroes4heroes.org. You can donate money on their site, volunteer your time to help them pack and ship items out, or simply mail them your entertainment media directly so it can be redistributed to the field. Again, the site is heroes4heroes.org. Become a hero for all our military heroes currently deployed.
Sheldon Goldberg with New England Championship Wrestling and my thoughts on the late Carl Gotch. Carl Gotch, one of the all-time great shooters in professional wrestling. There's so many things to say about Carl Gotch and what he meant. I first saw Carl Gotch in the 70s when I was a teenager, and he was tag team partners with Rene Goulet, and they had a brief run as WWF tag team champions. Gotch was just absolute poetry in motion. A thing of beauty to watch in the ring. As I say, he was one of the all-time great shooters, and there aren't very, very many of them left. When you think of great shooters in the history of professional wrestling, Gotch is probably at the top of the list, along with Lou Thesz, along with Big Bill Miller, along with the great Malenko, Hiro Matsuda. Those guys are all gone now. The only one left, really, is Danny Hodge. Carl Gotch, a very famous story about Carl Gotch having to do with he and Big Bill Miller beating up Nature Boy Buddy Rogers when he was the NWA champion. Gotch, really a legend. Had his greatest success over in Japan, where he was known by the nickname of the God of Wrestling. Carl Gotch was a trainer for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Inoki was very much enamored with Carl Gotch. He was a guy that a lot of people feared because he was a legit badass. He was a guy who could take you apart without breathing hard. As I said, was a trainer for New Japan Pro Wrestling, later helped start the original UWF and Pancrase. Carl Gotch really was the father of MMA, so if you're an MMA fan and you'd never really heard of Carl Gotch, you really have Carl Gotch to thank for mixed martial arts. Carl Gotch, a tremendous loss, just one of the all-time greats.
Fight Opinion Radio, and I'll tell you what, Zach, I'm tickled, I'm thrilled, I'm super happy to have the guest we have coming on right now.
Are you?
Yeah, it's a huge guest for us. I mean, it's kind of a silly introduction for a very serious fighter, MMA world champion of the UFC, champion and king of Pancrase. Actually, well known in Japan as a professional wrestler as well, superior athlete, an honor to have him on the show, Josh Barnett. Hello, Josh.
Howdy, guys. Good to be on the show, as usual.
I mean, we would have you on, I guess, under any occasion whatsoever, because we're big fans of yours, but we're having you on because you are a catch wrestler, and the catch wrestling community, I guess, suffered a terrible loss this week.
Kind of the basically the father of all the modern MMA within Japan, and really one of the guys to help spread and popularize catch wrestling and keeping it in the awareness of combat culture is Carl Gotch just passed away.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Carl Gotch, who he was, and what catch wrestling is essentially to the person who doesn't know what it is?
Well, Carl Gotch, born Carl Istaz, was a Olympic level Greco wrestler from, I think he was originally from Hungary, or Belgium, but he was born of Hungarian and German descent, or Hungarian Belgian. Not the most foremost historian about Carl Gotch, but he went to the Olympics in Greco-Roman wrestling, And from there, he actually learned the art of catch wrestling later on through having basic various challenge matches throughout Europe, and went on to become a professional wrestler all throughout Europe, and eventually brought himself to the United States and to his home in Japan, where he became the first trainer for the New Japan Pro Wrestling Dojo and taught what would become strong style pro wrestling as done by Antonio Inoki's New Japan, and would eventually also create the people to form the organization's Pancras, Shudo, rings, and all the offshoots from that, and also some of the most famous fighters from Japan and even now into America with myself, Matt Hume, Eric Paulson, even Ken Shamrock. So Carl Gotch really is a forefather of MMA and one of the reasons that we have MMA around. Catch wrestling was a shortened name for catch as catch can wrestling from Wigan, England is normally where it's credited to most as a popular reference, but it was essentially what they called professional wrestling matches back in the 1800s and 1900s when professional wrestling was still a legitimate competitive sport. And it involved submission holds and pinfalls at the time, but sometimes they would have special matches where, two out of three or no holds barred, which is where the term came from, where you could use any type of submission hold, sometimes even allowing strikes.
Well, now Carl Gotch really developed a reputation as an unbelievable trainer, and not only for, I guess, the techniques he showed, but I guess his training philosophy. And you, I understand, got to spend some time with Carl and learn a bit from him. What did you learn from him, and what was his, I guess, unique view or outlook on training?
Well, he always stressed conditioning as being your greatest hold. If you're not in shape, and if you get tired before the other guy, it's going to be hard for you to win the match. And he really believed in sort of building everything around a strong, fit, and well-conditioned body. That way, if anything, even against a superior wrestler, if you can wear him out, then you can do what you want with him. Carl believed in very simple techniques for the most part, and he really believed strongly in not giving your position on the ground as in, say, using guard or being on your back. I realize today, and so do many, that it's sort of a necessary position within MMA, but at the same time, still, I also believe in the tenet of try not to be on your back when you can be on top.
Yeah, so maybe you could help some of the listeners who aren't as familiar with catch wrestling. You know, they're very familiar, I would assume, with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Royce Gracie, where he made a name for himself by willingly going on his back, letting people kind of try to take a shot at him while he locked up an arm or a neck. How would a catch wrestler approach wrestling differently or
fighting
differently?
Well, a catch wrestler, for one, he would never concede. He would always try to get the takedown, score control over his opponent, and get to the position that he wanted to work from. Simply conceding position to just have somebody come into your guard or something like that, falling to your back, not deliberately taking control of your opponent, is not something a catch wrestler would ever do. I think that the modern day catch wrestler has a well developed game off their back in accordance with the rules of the competitions that we use nowadays. But even back in the original guys, they tried a lot of escapes, a lot of reversals, a lot of techniques to get on top of their opponent so that they can go back to working. And some wrestlers like John Pesek and Joe Stecker were even really capable with their legs in somewhat of what they like to call a scissors position or like a guard. They were able to use various techniques and to lock up double wrist locks, also known as the chicken wing, or other various ankles from off their back.
Exactly. Where can people learn more about catch wrestling? I mean, because people who are going to listen to this interview are going to be wondering, you know, they may be interested in, are there any DVDs or any websites or are there any reading materials that they can look at to learn more about catch wrestling?
Well, one of the best places to find information and some DVDs with wrestling instructional is scientificwrestling.com. That place has done a lot to preserve and keep that kind of information out and available for everybody to get. And And Jake Shan has done a really great job with that. He's even trying to bring back implements such as the mace, which Carl Gotch used in training folks down in Tampa. Also, ericpaulson.com will give you information on Orange County Sheet Wrestling, a school down here in Fullerton, California, where I train, and also many other pro fighters train at. And Eric teaches catch wrestling as well and has a whole set of DVDs that he's been producing for many years now.
When you look at Carl Gotch's role in history of modern mixed martial arts in Japan, you know, obviously everyone thinks about UWF, the U system. You know, there were various UWF incarnations and so forth. What is the role, I guess, for the average fan who is listening to this interview is thinking, you know, how come professional wrestling has a role in mixed martial arts in Japan? It doesn't have a role here in America, but it has a role in Japan. And what was Carl's role with influencing the UWF, and what was UWF's role in influencing the way MMA came out in Japan?
Carl taught the guys that would go on to teach the guys that would create the fighting leagues within Japan. And Carl didn't believe in pro wrestling as being simply sports entertainment. And in his opinion, if you couldn't really wrestle, then you had no business even trying to, you know, pass off the real thing as an entertainment sort of aspect. It just didn't, one was not separate of the other. And Carl taught them, he trained them as real wrestlers and submission guys. After that, they would take what they knew and apply it into, you know, matches in the ring. But to my understanding, a lot of times the people that were chosen to go over was decided in the gym, especially with the UWF system. You know, they would have guys have a shoot in the gym, and whoever won got to go over in the ring. Or sometimes if someone didn't want a job to another guy, they'd say, hey, well, okay, then just fight him for it. Then is that okay? Do you agree? All right, then go ahead. Do it for real. So they really didn't separate sports entertainment and wrestling. To them, it was one and the same. And while, you know, working and shooting were different aspects, they were treated as one and the same and intertwined within each other. So through that kind of wrestling training, reality training, guys like Fujiwara, Maeda, Sayama would eventually go on to train others like Suzuki and Funaki, Yoshinori Nakamura. Let me think. Maeda would go train, well, he didn't train Tamura. Actually, Tamura was trained by Bill Robinson and Fujiwara somewhat, but all these guys, their influence was felt all throughout the younger guys coming up and wanting to learn how to wrestle. And then from there, a guy like Funaki and Suzuki went on to form Pancras with Ken Shamrock as well. That whole system was what inspired these guys to say, hey, you know, we think that wrestling should not just incorporate submissions, but should have strikes. We should learn striking and grappling and everything. And in fact, pro wrestling is a legitimate fighting art. And from that, that's where the great MMA boom, and that's where all the great fighters from Japan came from.
Well, listen, you know, you mentioned Pancrase. You were the UFC champion. You were the King of Pancrase. You might still be. I don't know. Have they replaced you haven't fought there for a while. But
no, I'm still the King of Pancrase, luckily. You know, and through no fault of mine, every time I signed a contract in Japan, I was always allowed to fight a King of Pancrase match, but the companies I worked with decided they never wanted to actually honor their agreements, so
okay.
It's difficult.
All right, well, then that really leads me to my question. You were a superstar in Pride, and now Pride has kind of imploded. It's been sold to the UFC, but you would be, I would assume, a free agent. What do we have? What do you have on the horizon right now?
Right now, I'm talking to several different organizations. It's just really important to me that not only do I get the best market value for me as a brand and as an entertainer, but also I want to be somewhere where I feel like you know, they appreciate what I bring and they want what I have to offer. And I'm either way, of course, anybody that hires me is going to be looking to make money off of me, but the other thing to make money off of me versus dicking me around like Pride did and doing things that were unscrupulous.
Well, what, you know, I know that Pride had you fighting back to back to back to back. And we used to talk on the show, how can Josh Barnett physically get ready to fight another fight so soon? Is there something beyond that that they did that you didn't think was fair?
The negotiation process to start with was marred by deception and lying, which didn't sit well with me. And then in the end, they ended up owing me money, which is why I never signed over the release agreement then. And, you know, basically really just shattered any sort of any ability to work with Pride ever again in my eyes, or even the people behind Pride.
Wow. Well, that's
When you look at the scene right now in Japan without Pride, it's basically K-1 Heroes and everyone else. What's your viewpoint of what the climate is of mixed martial arts, both in Japan and in America?
In Japan, it's really kind of tapered off right now because there isn't Pride. The smaller organizations are still going as such. I think Deep is actually running more shows now because of it. But the companies that were at the size that they were when Pride was in business haven't changed. And really nothing has changed other than Pride is not there. And some of the high caliber fighters that perhaps, maybe they're more expensive and therefore, the smaller promotions aren't able to afford them are now left on the sidelines. But in America, there's a new small, medium, large promotion popping up every second. And, honestly, most of them aren't going to be able to have any sustainability. But at the same time, UFC is doing everything they can to monopolize it. I mean, it's gotten to the point where people call it Ultimate Fighting and not MMA.
Right.
In terms of fighter salaries right now, you look at a lot of the undercard guys in UFC, they're not making substantial money. And I know that in the recent Sportsline article, you talked with Sam Kaplan about this issue, and you feel that many of the undercard guys who are crying foul about their salaries are actually being paid fairly. What's your theory on fighter salaries and what kind of escalating chart should there be?
The thing about salaries is this, and that is, it's easy to always say, hey, if they've got more money, they should pay it to me, right? You know, and someone made an example a while back about, you know, the guys making the burgers at McDonald's, they think they should get all the money, but they're not the one that put up the money to buy all the burgers, to get the franchise name, to pay all the other employees, pay the manager to make sure that guy makes the burgers correctly, and then also pay to have that place cleaned every night and buy the building and keep it up to date. I mean, there's a lot of costs in the back end on the promoter side that the people just don't even take it into consideration. You know, if it wasn't for the promoter putting up all that money to begin with, there would be no opportunity for you to cry about your paycheck. However, it's an interesting situation in that certainly when guys are making 3 and 3, but they've decided that they're not going to work a job, part-time or full-time, you can't live on that. I understand that. But at the same time, I wouldn't tell a guy, look, if you're only making 3 and 3 a fight and you're fighting 3 times a year, let's say, then what are you doing quitting your job? Those 3 and 3 fights are not going to be the ones that are going to put you in the spotlight. Two, they need proper management. There's a lot of managers out here that just, they don't do a really good job for their clients. Clearly, if some of the contracts that I see are as such, they're just not really looking out for their best interest and tying them into 5-10 fight deals. And some of those deals where the guys aren't making that much money are because of Ultimate Fighter TV show contracts, where they lock them in for years and X amount of contract numbers. It's King of the Cage style, where they used to sign a guy for 10 fights, 12 fights, and keep their pay down. And even as their popularity rises, they're not getting paid anymore. That's just not smart business. But they're hungry for the opportunity, so it's not UFC's fault that say, hey, you know, we'll give you this shot, but you got to sign with this. It's, if you know the deal the devil's offering and you sign anyways, then I guess it's sort of on your own head. But at the same time, hey, you know, when I fought for 3 and 3 and whatnot, I still had a job. I didn't stop working until after I fought Pedro Hizo and decided to go out at full steam, and I suffered for it. But, you know, I was willing to be a beggar to do that, and it paid off. And I always tell everybody, don't get into fighting for money because you're just going to be unhappy. If you ever really make a lot of money at this, you'll be lucky. Most of us never will. And even still, people are getting paid better in Ultimate Fighting Championship at the small lower end than they are in boxing. All the journeymen and guys out there working, even guys on the fight nights on like Fox Sports and whatnot, they're making less money than the UFC guys are on a general basis. So there's certainly pros and cons to all of this and pluses that people don't keep into consideration. The big difference is going to be at the top and at the middle level. And when it comes to expansion, I think one problem with some of the companies like UFC is there is no money into merchandising.
Yeah, you're talking about how you held a job while you were getting 3+3. I mean, if UFC is not offering a lot of money to get into the business, does that not mean that they're not going to attract the best talent necessarily? I mean, you know, we've heard guys like Kyle Maynard say that they want to come into fighting, but...
Not an issue, because boxing doesn't pay that. Hardly anybody gets those big multi-million dollar paydays, but everybody, but you know what, boxers come out of nowhere just to give... It's people, because... The guys that are really good aren't in it for money. They get into it because they love it, because they want, they would do it for free. And they probably did do it for free, at least at some point. And I fought my first, I don't know how many fights for free. You know, there was no promotion that I could go to. I could try and I didn't know how to get a hold of Extreme Challenge or, you know, Hook and Shoot or these things. I was off here in the Northwest, doing whatever I could, fighting people over the internet. You know, hey, what weight are you? How many fights you have? You want, what rules you want to fight under? I mean, I didn't do that because I thought I was going to be rich. I did it because I thought I want to fight.
Well, I, you know, Josh,
and people are still going to fight.
Josh, there was something else you addressed in that interview, which I think is really interesting for people who aren't behind the scenes at these fight shows, and that is the fact that what you see listed in the official, I guess, state records as a fighter salary may not reflect what he's really being paid. Can you mm-hmm. walk people through not by anybody specifically, but generally how that works?
Well, some people get different cuts within their deals. Certainly, there are fighters out there getting a cut of the pay-per-view, and that isn't necessarily their salary. You know what I mean? But if you're only getting, if you see a guy, he's getting paid $200,000, but he's taking home $700,000 in pay-per-view revenue. That's a big difference. There are several, I would say, at least a handful of fighters out there right that are making over $1 million every time they step in the ring. And that's indicative of the growth of the sport. And like I was saying earlier, that's where the real difference is going to be, is as these promotions continue to make hand over fist money, are they going to give it to the people that are allowing them to make that money? Joe Blow at 3-3 is not giving them, is not making a million pay-per-view buy.
Yeah.
But Randy Couture is. So therefore, if Joe Schmo gets 3-3, I'm not that upset about it. I'm sure if UFC wanted to, they could afford to bump it up to say 5-5 for entry level guys. Personally, I think that they should use less Joe Schmoes and concentrate on putting more guys that have a future and a talent at being in there. And that means even if they lose, to continue to stick with the guy instead of bring him in, watch them fight and cut them loose. I mean, that just makes it look like they're really unimportant. Or I think that if you don't have that much airtime, you should spend it on more on fighters that are going to make an impact.
Well,
but back to your question, yeah, people are getting cuts of pay-per-views. People are getting, some people actually have merchandise percentages they get, which is really rare from UFC. Pride used to give all its fighters cuts of merchandise with their name on it, to my understanding, but I'm sure that was a rarity. And a lot of fighters, like, let's say, video games. Remember Scott Norton told me about the checks he used to receive in the mail from WCW for their video game. They were astronomical. They were every day, you know, some giant check would show up and he'd just walk smiling all the way to the bank. Well, the big UFC game comes out and it sells a million copies. Only UFC is getting that money. But,
yeah,
you know, maybe there's somebody else who isn't.
Well, I have a question, too, about that, because I understand the whole idea that a guy's worth, you know, is determined by what the amount of, I guess, buyers he can bring to the event. But the problem I have with that, Josh, right now is that when you have one event dominating, you don't have a market to establish what that's really worth yet. And so that's kind of one of the things that makes me concerned about. You have the UFC making $200 million in pay-per-view revenue and seemingly paying a very small percentage of that out, which is, God bless the UFC for being so successful. But if you had anybody else who could compete with them, then the fighters might be getting a more significant cut of that $200 million.
people need, and it, honestly, competition is an absolute necessity. It really is. Because even as you state with the UFC making whatever they're making and paying what they pay, if you decide, if even 10 guys decide, well, we won't fight for 3-3, there'll be another 10 guys that'll step right up and do it in their place. Problem is, it's unless everybody banded together and made a union, but then when does that stop? Okay, well, we think all these guys should get more money. Well, that what that usually means is that the people at the top are going to suffer, you know, and these promotions, this really is based on, you know, star power has something to do with it. If you're drawing the fans in, why should you be punished for your success? It's just like UFC, why should they be punished for, you know, they're making more money? But also, really, why should Chuck Liddell be punished if he's the one that's bringing in all the revenue? He should get the biggest cut, which is, you know, an issue here in boxing. I don't remember what the percentages was, but they're getting a much larger percentage back to the fighters for the pay-per-view revenue than people in UFC are. And not everyone in UFC gets a cut of the pay-per-view, even if they're the main event. So there's a lot of money there that I think should be in the fighters' hands. It's just not going there. But at the same time, I don't know UFC's books. Now, they're making a lot of money now, but maybe they lost a lot of money. Maybe they're still spending a lot of money to expand. It's really difficult to say.
You know, certainly you were part of Pride, and you've seen a lot of Pride guys come into UFC, and it's been pretty mixed success in terms of some of the guys, whether it's Mirko or Nogueira or Heath Herring. How do you think UFC has handled the Pride fighters so far in their company?
With the same lackluster stuff as they do with everybody. I think there could be a lot more ballyhoo about it. I think they put some good effort into Mirko, but he just had a bad night. He didn't show up ready to go, and he paid for it, and I think he recognizes that, and he'll fix it for the next fight. But you know, certainly they're getting a lot of respect from the UFC as far as letting people know what they're about, but I think there could be more effort done into trying to maybe highlight the rivalry or possible rivalry between the two. I think there's just some opportunities that they're not really taking advantage of. As far as calling them Pride fighters and UFC fighters, you know, they could have sat everybody down and said, look, all you guys from Pride, you're going to be the Pride Army, and you're going to fight the UFC Army and just run with it. But I don't think they want to do something like that.
Well, you know what? Speaking, though, of rivalries and promotions and buildups, there's a fight that I think a lot of people have been waiting to see, and we want to know if there's any news of it on the horizon, and that's you against Fedor. Now, Fedor is a free agent. His agent saying that he's unhappy with Bodog, where he's been fighting. Do you have anything on the horizon that looks like you get a shot at Fedor, and do you know where he may be landing, and would you try to land with him?
No, I don't have any idea about it, and I can't say that Fedor would be my ultimate decision in going somewhere. I'm not here to chase him down. I think it would be the fight of the century, bigger than any of these other fights you could put together in UFC, bigger than any of those, honestly. I mean, I just don't see, there isn't any two guys you could put together in the UFC that would be more important in my opinion. At this point, I'm a free agent, he's a free agent, we're both sort of seeing the market. Certainly opened my eyes a bit, being on the outside, looking at some of these different promotions, and it's interesting. Now that the money is coming in, their attitudes are a little interesting. They really think they're pretty top high shit now, and they've got some interesting opinions of themselves and who they think they should give their money to sometimes. And
so you aren't being pitched like you hear the famous stories about Don King pitching fights between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, getting them to get together and raising the money. No, you aren't being pitched a package deal right now. It looks like.
I don't have anything with Fedor. I think that if a promoter got together and made that fight, it could be really big. There is a downfall that I think Fedor isn't quite as known in the U.S. I think to all the fighters and the hardcores and people really into and are really up to date with MMA fighting right now, they know how good Fedor is and that he is the number one guy right now. But you know, because he hasn't been on The Ultimate Fighter, that makes him less of a draw. You know what I mean?
Do you think that K1 would be willing to book the fight, and we'd be able to book it on New Year's Eve?
I don't think they'd do it.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe they spent all their money on Brock.
Do you think anyone in America would be willing to book it?
So far, no.
That's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate.
It is. You know what? They want to clam down on their pocketbooks, and they can go ahead, and it's just too expensive a fight, I think, for most people to put together. UFC could do it, but I think they're probably too proud. Not to mention, if either one of us ended up in UFC, then they'd have to face the realization that all their guys are going to get beat, and everybody that they're claiming is a champion, which is funny because, in my eyes, they haven't actually had a champion since I left, because none of those guys ever beat me for the belt, and, you know, the guys that are going to be fighting here August 25th, none of them ever beat me either. So what's the point of fighting for that thing? If I was, I got the belt sitting back at home in a cupboard, you know, wrapped up in the bag it came with. That's the UFC heavyweight championship title. And if they ever really want to have a UFC heavyweight championship belt, then they're going to have to go and take it from me. Otherwise, they're just a bunch of paper champs.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty strong statement. And I guess that the heavyweight situation, although they do have some of the top fighters from Japan now with Nogueira and Krokop entering.
They do. It's made it very viable now. Beforehand, it was a laughing stock. Now that they've got all those guys in there, it certainly bolstered their division. But like I said, as good as all those guys are, they're fighting over a tin belt. It's got no value. It's not the real UFC belt. So go ahead, they can go and polish a turd all they want to. It's still a turd when they wake up in the morning.
Jeff, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure how I could top that question. Or
my turd reference? You like?
Well, you know, I haven't heard anybody call that belt a turd in quite some time, if ever. But if anybody's entitled to say it, I guess it's the former title holder himself, right? So
that's right.
But I do have to ask you a serious question, and it kind of relates to your time at the UFC title, because you left under unfortunate circumstances because of testing positive several years ago, and now we've had this, I guess, whole slew of positive tests coming out that have raised this issue of steroid use and drug use and MMA to the forefront. And Josh, is there something the sport can be doing or should be doing to kind of control this, bring it under control, and protect its reputation in future?
Compared to 30 years ago, media infiltration in sports is, in my opinion, much too deep. We know way too much about the people that we go to watch for entertainment, that we get so drawn up into picking apart their lives, their mistakes, and their glories, that it's akin to, I use this reference all the time, you go to a magic show, right? You go to David Copperfield or David Blaine or something. He does a really fantastic trick. And, of course, you know it's a trick of some sort. However, you don't know how he did it, so therefore it's interesting and amazing and gets you thinking. You would go to see it again, in fact. Now, the media infiltration, in my opinion, is similar to, if you knew exactly how he was going to do the trick, when he was going to do the trick, and you know how he accomplished it, then what would be the point of seeing that anymore? In fact, you might actually be pissed off that what he did wasn't nearly as intricate or as fantastic as you thought it would be. And now you're left being mad because you know more than you really ever should have. And that's the way I see the way that people pick at professional athletes throughout all the different sports nowadays. They had an idea of what they thought professional sports really was, and now that they can see exactly what goes on, how dirty it can be, how difficult, how much struggling there is behind it, how it's not as glorious and as wonderful as some people think, and it makes them mad that their people are not as much as they want them to be superheroes, they're actually just people. So I mean, that's one of my big issues. However, I can't necessarily say that UFC has a problem, because one thing that I think is really important is that there is not, as far as what to watch out for. Now, it's certainly easy to say, don't take steroids. That's simple. But, however, just not but 2 months ago, I was in a supplement shop, completely legal. There's a supplement being pulled off the shelves right now because it contains 80% equipoise. Completely legal. You take this, you're going to test for equipoise because technically you're on equipoise and you wouldn't even know it. I asked when I went back to Nevada to fight for the Real Deal show in Vegas, I questioned the crap out of everybody to try and get And I said, hey, where's the sheet? Is there some sort of sheet I can see to say, hey, don't do this, don't do that, watch this, stay away from that, don't have a level over this, don't do this. No, no sheet, no nothing. They tell you they want you to be as clear and free, and they don't want you to endanger your health or whatever the reasons may be, but they don't give you the information. They tell me to look it up in some book that I don't have, and or go to this website. Well, I went to the website and I looked up that stuff, and then I even spoke to the pre-fight doctor, and I said, look, what do I got to be careful of? He said, don't drink an espresso, don't drink an energy drink, don't do any of that. I'm like, well, why not? Because you will test positive for methamphetamines. Methamphetamines. You're going to get busted for taking meth, and all you had was a Starbucks double shot. I mean, can you imagine that? And it doesn't matter if you go and you fight and you refute and you say, I didn't take methamphetamines. In the end, I have never seen any case where that guy wasn't still punished. And even the things that I used to take back in 2002, which were completely legal. As of January in 2004, every single supplement I used to take has been put on the banned substance list and turned and considered a controlled substance and a steroid. So technically, the United States used to be able to sell steroids over the counter. So there you go. Be careful. Absolutely careful. You take too much creatine, you're going to get busted. They have a level on how much creatine you can have in your system. People will not know this. Do not go into this ignorant or blind. Now, I'm sure some of the people probably were taking steroids. I'm sure if you roll the dice, chances will probably come up that way. But you know, there could be people, maybe Sean Sherk didn't take steroids. Maybe Nathan Marquardt wasn't taking steroids. What I remember is he was taking a supplement called Animal Pack, and he had the old ones that used to have norandrosine. Well, norandrosine was on the banned substance list, but they never, of course, gave him a banned substance list, so he would know that. But, you know, he's going to have to be punished in the end. And I think it should show that if he was taking DECA as they claimed he was, then when he took his second test, it would have still been there. But it wasn't, because he was never taking DECA.
Wow. So, there, you know, this issue, everybody talks about it. We talk about it. We hash it all over. But there's really just so many different things as a pro fighter, the things you have to think about, the things you have to worry about, your approach to it. It's an issue that I got to imagine that most of the guys coming up who don't have the time to or the experience and the education you have, they're going to find themselves getting in trouble often.
Yes. Yeah. It's you know what? It is not as hard to get a positive test as you would think it is. You need to be careful. And it's just, I think that there should be more education that way. But at the same time, it's kind of weird. I mean, where do you draw the line? I guess if you say steroids are illegal, right? Well, you say creatine's legal. Well, then let's say they decide, well, creatine makes you increase muscle mass and strength and endurance. So therefore, that's an unfair advantage. You can't take creatine anymore. Well, okay. Well, what can I take? Well, you can take, this. Well, this only does half as good as creatine. Okay. So basically, it sounds to me almost like if it does what it says and is effective, you can't take it. But if it is considered unknown or even detrimental, then you can go ahead and take it. Doesn't bother us. As long as you don't take something that actually does what it says. It kind of seems that way.
Well, all right. Well, that's really a different perspective, something we haven't heard, at least I haven't seen or heard lately at all. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Josh, I got to be honest with you. There's been a question I've been meaning to ask you, I think, for 6.5 years, and I've never had the chance to talk to you and ask you this question. So do you mind if I ask you the question?
Go ahead.
Okay. When you fought Pedro Hizo in 2001 at UFC 30, everybody was looking forward to it. It was an awesome fight, unbelievable fight. I remember the fight to this day. Unfortunately, you lost. But I had to ask you, if you had Pedro on the ground, I thought you could take him, and you stood up there and went toe-to-toe with the guy for the entire fight and were probably ahead at the time that you got caught. Were you going to take him to the ground at any point?
I was thinking about it, but I was hitting him so much, I just decided to keep it on the feet. I got a little greedy.
Because to me, man, I guess there's a lot of people listening to the show who won't remember what it was like in the UFC in 2000 or 2001. But I'll tell you what, Zach remembers. I remember it was an incredibly exciting time. There was a lot of great heavyweights, and that fight was just an unbelievable fight. And so for all these years, I wanted to know Josh Barnett, the grappler, why he wanted to stand up the whole fight, duke it out with Pedro Hizo. So.
Well, at least I proved a point that, you know, I could get in there and throw blows with anybody. But you know, the thing with striking is anybody can get knocked out. Of course, you wish every punch you threw would knock somebody out, but what's the likelihood of that? Not
right.
Very.
Well,
so I think there are lucky punches. I mean, you aim for the best, but you don't usually get the result you want. But I don't think there's lucky submissions.
So therefore, when you take down Mark Hunt and submit him,
hit me at any point, just knock me out. Or I might have, you know, going for a takedown, I could have hit him with the right hand coming in just to get in and get a takedown. And boom, I knocked him out. Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah,
I didn't think that was going to happen.
The other thing I wanted to give you just props for, this is a very personal thing, and friends of mine will appreciate this, but you went in to the Pride 32 in Las Vegas, taking on Paul Nastula, and you beat him by toe hold. And I have a personal saying that no matter where you are, there's always a figure of four toe hold. So God bless you, Josh Barnett, for proving my point and taking him out with that submission, because we don't see it enough. So
you know what? That is true. You can get to a figure four toe hold from about any position. I got so many different ways of getting into a figure four toe hold, let alone just a regular old toe hold with a, you know, with a knee on the ankle or anything, or a foot on the ankle, something. I've got all different kinds of ways to use toe hold. So, yeah, you know, that was nice. I wanted to finish him with a leg lock too.
Yeah. And I guess if people want to, you know, you're training with Eric Paulson, you're down in San Diego, and, you know, I guess you don't see it enough in MMA right now, but, you guys do a lot of toe holds down there. There's a lot of lower body submissions. If people want to find out more about what you guys are doing down there, what is the gym and how do they get a hold of you down there?
It's called OC Shoot Wrestling. It's in Fullerton, California. You can go to get some information on it at www.ericpaulson.com, ericpaulson.com, and you can follow the link also from my webpage, joshbarnett.tv. And we don't put any limitations on what we can do. Eric also has a catch wrestling background, and, you know, unlike maybe, you know, jiu-jitsu, some of the jiu-jitsu schools, we don't limit. We do all the lower body submissions. We'd use neck locks, face locks, pain locks, joint, anything. We even can teach a small joint manipulation, even though it's illegal. But the idea being that we don't limit ourselves at all.
No, not at all. And for those who don't know, Eric, a former Shooto champion and one of the really early pioneers, he was doing the shoot fighting, the MMA style fighting before the first UFC. So a definite, very knowledgeable, very, very well-known trainer for those of people who may not know who he is. Well, Josh, I got to say, Zach, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Abe. Josh, by the way, who are some of the people you're training right now?
Well, I've been working with some various females. I'm always working with Shannon Hooper and Megumi Fuji, but recently Janelle Marquez moved out to Fullerton with us and started training. Just last week I helped train Shayna Baszler up for her upcoming fight in Show XC, which she just won by armbar. Janelle just won her last fight by a crazy unanimous decision, just destroyed her opponent, Megumi Adoshita, over 3 rounds, in Fatal Femmes. And I got Eric. Eric was going to fight in Bodog, but unfortunately they decided that they are going to renege on what they agreed upon. And so we're going to have to see what to do with that. But Megumi Fuji and Abe, Hiroyuki Abe, is going to be fighting in Bodog August 25th. But I guess we'll have to wait to see the results later when it comes on television. Babalu Sobral and Justin Levins have just joined our gym as well and been training with us, and hopefully I'll be there in UFC with Babalu in his corner at UFC 75 now. Isn't that what it is for Randy Fights Gonzaga?
Yes,
I can't back up on them all anymore. Why can't they just call it like UFC Rising Tour, UFC Trans, or UFC Yes We Are Hybrid Wrestlers or something?
Yeah, or UFC Super Awesome. I think that would be good.
Yeah, UFC Super Awesome.
Awesome, Mark. See, I should be a marketing guy, Zach. Forget what I'm doing now with my life. Forget the podcast. I'm quitting. I'm going into marketing.
All right, you're going to leave me behind. Okay, go ahead.
You know what? Stay away from those illegal drugs, because we don't want there to be a problem within the media culture as well.
Imagine if I took like a brain stimulant and then therefore got better ideas for marketing than everybody else. Would that be fair? No, wouldn't be fair.
As long as it's not against the law to do so, I don't know. You never know.
Well, I don't want to have an unfair, intelligence advantage against my competition. So I'm going to have to stick to natural fruits and substances. All right. Well, listen, Jack. Zach, how about Josh?
Wow.
How about
you? Listen, Jack, I got something to tell you, bud.
Right, it's half Zach. It's half Josh. Obviously, we're coming to the end of a remarkable interview.
Oh, yeah. I'll be at the IGF September 8th in Nagoya, Japan, for the next Inokigenon Federation show.
Are you fighting Kurt Angle?
If I get my wish, yeah. I'll get that IWGP belt for once.
There you go. Another little bit of breaking news here. All right, well, listen, Josh, it was really a great honor to have you on the show. I think that, you make a lot of very lucid and important points about what's going on, not only with, I guess, the state of the industry and the latest controversies, but just really bringing a lot of knowledge about the history of the sport, the history of catch wrestling, and what was going on in Japan, and a nice tribute to Carl Gotch. And so we're very grateful to have had you here, and we wish you the best of luck. If you want to find out more about Josh, definitely check out Josh Barnett TV or .tv. And Josh, when you have a fight booked and you're ready to talk about it, can we have you back on the show?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, then that's it. That's great news, guys. That's it for the Josh Barnett interview. Everybody stick around, though, because we're going to have lots more Fight Opinion Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Caleb from the Fightworks Podcast, and you're locked in to Fight Opinion Radio. If you've ever wanted to learn more about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or submission grappling, then check out the Fightworks Podcast, where we interview the biggest names out there today, from classic BJJ personalities to up-and-coming forces in mixed martial arts. Check us out at thefightworkspodcast.com. Okay, family, keep training and keep listening to Fight Opinion Radio with Zach Arnold.
One of the greatest champions to ever grace the octagon, Randy the Natural Couture, has done the impossible again by dominating 6'10", 265-pound Tim Sylvia for the UFC World Heavyweight title.
Randy Couture
is once again the heavyweight champion of the world! Gabriel Napal Gonzaga has knocked out Mirko Krokop, the most dangerous heavyweight striker in the world, in the first round. Now, these two incredible warriors will meet. UFC World Heavyweight Champion Randy Couture faces Gabriel Gonzaga for the UFC Heavyweight crown. Also, George Rush St. Pierre returns to the octagon with a vengeance, with plans of derailing the 11-1 powerhouse Josh Koscheck, who comes off the biggest win of his career by handing Diego Sanchez his first loss in the UFC. The Ultimate Fighting Championship presents UFC 74 Respect, live Saturday, August 25th from the Mandalay Bay Event Center in Las Vegas, only on pay-per-view.
Are you a fight fan? Kakuto.com offers the best memorabilia from K1, Pride, Zero-One, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and so much more. Japanese goods, Japanese prices. That means you pay what a customer pays in Japan. You can't beat it. www.kakuto.com. That's www.kakuto.com.
It's not easy being an MMA fan. Your annoying brother-in-law, who's been watching MMA since Ultimate Fighter Season 5, continues to claim that he knows more about fighting than you. I hate to tell you this, buddy, but I think Royce Gracie's gonna be the next champ. You know he's the best heavyweight ever. Well, we can't help that he married your sister, but we can make your brother-in-law shut his fat pie hole about how he knows MMA better than you. At MMAPredictions.com, you can track your predictions against that jerk over time and see graphs showing which of you really knows the sport. You can even create groups among your buddies to talk smack. Use it for the guys at the office, your gym, or your girlfriend's book club. Be careful, though. Woo! I won again! MMAPredictions.com. Pick. Share. Compare. Win.
All right, it's grab bag time, guys. This is it. This is the time for the world famous grab bag, the most popular segment in all of MMA radio, and our lucky listeners are just about to hear it. Well, I'm excited. I love the grab bag. It's always, we learn a lot. We laugh a lot. It's just always a surprise. I got to tell you, it's my favorite segment.
And people who think we actually prepare for this segment, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, there is no preparation involved at all.
Hello. Have you listened to the show lately? All right. So I think we should start the grab bag with the master of ceremonies, the man, the number one, the numero uno of Fight Opinion. That's you, Zach Arnold.
Wow. I've got the topic for you, Jeff, because I think you'll be quite interested in. Earlier in the show, we were talking about Dana White and his comments in the ESPN interview about the drug policy in mixed martial arts and boxing, saying that it was the best drug policy in sports. And we're going to find out quickly what kind of drug policies really do exist within World Wrestling Entertainment, which, of course, has had its drug policy highlighted quite a bit since the tragic murder-suicide of Chris Benoit and his family. Nonetheless, Congress is now investigating, and they have given a deadline of August the 24th for WWE to provide all emails, all material, all records, and anything related to their drug testing policy that has not been revealed to the public.
Uh-oh.
Which you gotta love, because you know that the WWE hasn't exactly been incredibly strident about this whole drug testing policy like they'd want you to believe.
Guys, you look at them and they're humongous and muscled, and they have to be on steroids to be that big is what you're thinking to yourself. And they're all working for the same company day in, day out, every day with no oversight at all. MMA is a state-regulated sport. In a lot of states, it's regulated. In the states where it's not, if they do something substantially similar, I can't see them getting called on the mat like wrestling is, honestly.
Well, you wouldn't think so, but then again, WWE isn't technically regulated drug-wise at all, and yet here they are getting in huge trouble for it. So it's possible that the same outrage that's going on with pro wrestling right now could carry over.
Major League Baseball was called to the carpet in 2005. They had already instituted their own private drug testing.
Major League Baseball is a different story because they have an antitrust exemption under the law. So they're subject to Congress's oversight in a sense, because Congress could remove that exemption. So they always have to kiss Congress's ass, and Congress generally takes a greater interest in them as a result.
Let's focus here quickly in the congressional investigation of WWE.
Okay.
And what's going to happen here, because it's obvious that we're going to find out a lot of things that are not very good, and we're going to find out how many guys exactly had medical exemptions to take testosterone replacement therapy or to take steroids. And once we find that out, and we find out just how bad the drug culture is in professional wrestling, we'll now have a benchmark of what not to do for mixed martial arts, for any other sport looking at trying to clean up its drug industry, because I think we're going to find out the entire Pandora's box of what professional wrestling has been doing for the last 20, 30 years, all rolled into one seminal event, which would be August 24th, and all the data will be made public.
There's your prediction. Aaron.
Yes.
Can I put you on the spot?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to pick your grab pack topic because I heard or I read that you froze your ass off to go to a show in San Francisco. Is this true?
I did. I am the big moron who is forever forgetting how much colder it is in San Francisco than it is in Sacramento. I was thinking it's 100 degrees in Sacramento. It'll be cooler in San Francisco, no doubt, but I'll still be fine wearing pants and a tank top. Of course not. I get there, it's like 60 degrees. I'm dying.
You were in shorts? You were in shorts and a tank top?
It was, well, they were my capri pants, so they hit like right below the knee, but yeah, pretty much. And so, thankfully, the promoters are incredibly nice guys and hooked me up with a great free sweatshirt, and I was fine after that, but yeah, I'm really going to have to work on that one.
Now, are you saying that your body froze a little bit?
It was chilly. We'll go.
Are you saying
that
the nipples got hard?
I did not say that. And
just
I will thank you to leave your speculation about my nipples alone.
I'm just asking hard questions.
I'll tell you what. I'll ask another question. What did you think of the show besides that, Aaron?
The the show was good. It was your traditional small show, but thankfully only one fight in the stands, which is pretty damn good considering that it was general admission and everyone was crammed up on the bleachers.
Okay, wait a minute. Which show? I don't think we said yet. Which show did you go to?
This was Gladiator Challenge at the Kazar Pavilion in San Francisco this last Saturday.
All right, so one fight in the stands, which, you know what, is, you know, I used to go to shows and never see any fights, but all right, one fight in the stand. What about the fights in the cage? Anything stand out?
The fights in the cage were good. Pretty much your traditional ones, a good mix of real quick knockouts and ones that unfortunately went the distance. The main event was Raul Castillo, who's a local fighter, has a 2-0 record versus Nick Theoticos, who just came off an outstanding win on Strikeforce, where he completely knocked the guy out to the point where his opponent had to be carried out on the stretcher. So I go in telling my assistant that I had with me that unless Castillo is, you know, majorly impressive, Theoticos is just going to walk away with this. Obviously, my predicting skills are quite pathetic as Castillo completely dominated the match and won it in the first round.
All right, so now we got a fighter to watch, Zach, officially, Castillo.
The only thing I like to watch more is actually reading Aaron's reports because he usually comes up with some inane statements that I just shake my head at.
Yes, but you love my inane statements because that's what makes them different from everybody else's reports.
60 degrees in San Francisco is not cold.
Compared to 100 degrees in Sacramento, it is.
I would have been fine North Dakota if I had worn, or something.
I would have been fine if I had worn jeans and a t-shirt, but I didn't. I was a moron, okay?
You are a pansy.
You know what? I want to bring back the love.
Thank
I bring
you,
back
Zach.
The love, guys?
Please.
Why,
bring
do
back
we need
love.
A settlement?
Yes, Zach, spoiler, ruiner of person's grab bag topics. Yes, I think we need to bring back the love. We all need to get together and settle our differences. Just like Ed Fishman did with his lawsuit in Pride. Zach, you're reporting, I think you're the only one reporting as the time we're writing this, that Ed Fishman's lawsuit against Pride has been dismissed with prejudice. What does that mean, dismissed with prejudice? Luckily, listeners of Fight Opinion, I'm an attorney, I can explain it to you. Dismissed with prejudice means it's been dismissed and cannot be refiled again. That's the end of the case, finality. If they dismissed it without prejudice, that would have meant that they could bring the case again at a later time, which means, in all likelihood, we have a private and confidential settlement to this case. And what looked like could a case that could go out with a bang, and that meant depositions and public disclosure of the Pride dealings and UFC's private dealings, ends with a whimper instead. We may never know nothing because, Zach, as you reported, no discovery was ever done in the case.
Yeah, and UFC had desperately tried to block any sort of witness depositions through confidential statements related to the Pride asset sale. They, Kirk Kendrick, the Fertittas, they refused depositions in the case rather than fight those confidential statements, which Ed Fishman probably could have. If he really wanted to, he probably could have pierced right through them. He chose to settle.
All right, so there you go. We thought we were going to be able to get some very interesting inside knowledge. Instead, they settled. Now, when we interviewed Ed Fishman, Zach, he said no matter what, he's going to be looking forward to getting back in MMA. I guess we'll find out now if that's really his intent.
And with who?
And with whom. All right, guys, that's it for our big show. We want to give a big thanks to Josh Barnett. We're really honored he came on the show and joined us. And next week, guys, we will be back with lots more Fight Opinions. So, say goodnight, Zach.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Aaron.
Good night.
You stay classy, Internet.
And thanks for stopping by.